Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kaseva, your honorary First Inclusion Project podcast host. Welcome back to another episode of the College Takeover, All Things Inclusive Edition, where I'm having thoughtful conversation with some amazing college pals with the hopes of inspiring you all to engage in conversations and actions that will create a more inclusive world. Today, we're going to be talking about mental health and how it plagues the young people in college with my guest, Grace.
Hi, I'm Grace Joseph. I am a Loyola University New Orleans graduate, bachelor's in science in psychology with a minor in forensic studies. I currently work at a syringe exchange in the San Diego County area. And we do syringe exchange, we do pipe exchange, we do health services and referrals. And then I am soon to be getting my master's in mental health counseling and social work at Boston University in the fall, and I'm super excited about that.
Wow, congratulations on pursuing higher education.
Yeah, it was funny. It was like the first thing they told us. It was like my first day, and they were like, I had a professor walking in. I'm all excited. I'm all nervous. There's like 50 of us in this room, and the professor walks in. She's like, hey guys, welcome to your bachelor's, the start of your bachelor's journey. Just letting you know, you cannot really do anything with your degree unless you get a master's. And it was like, why would you say that?
Right.
I always wanted to get my PhD anyway, so it just kind of, you know, solidified like, okay, I gotta really work for this. But
well, I wish you the best of luck, and thank you so much for being a part of this conversation.
I'm so happy to be here.
All right. So for some of us, college has been a time for meeting new people and having access to different opportunities. And for some, college has been a time of navigating through some tough challenges. Navigating college as a young adult is one thing, but navigating college as a young adult with mental health issues is a whole other thing. What was your experience like?
So we talked about this a lot prior to recording, but I do have a variety of like mental health issues. So I've had ADHD since like the beginning of time, and then I have clinically diagnosed like major depression, generalized anxiety. I have PTSD from like a variety of traumatic events, and then we talked about it a little bit before we started recording on the pod. I am four and a half years sober, which is insane to think about. I think going from, you know, our high school experience where mental health wasn't necessarily something to be talked about. And if we did talk about it, it was only as a joke. So at our high school, we would joke a lot about how much sleep we did not get. And like,
Yeah, that is absolutely right.
And it was like an inside joke, and it was like almost a competition. And so whoever pushed themselves mentally the hardest was always like a flex. But going from that environment to New Orleans, where I went to undergrad, was like this beautiful little lovely change where I felt I was in an environment where so many people were already open about their mental health challenges. And so I felt like I could. Was in a really like abusive relationship in my senior year of high school. And then I broke up with them. And then right in my like third day at my new college, I started dating someone new. And, you know, that was a mistake because I think that was just like me rebounding emotionally. But, you know, I hadn't processed anything that had happened. And so I was having to process my own experiences of the past like 4 years of this other school, this past year of being in this other relationship, with this new relationship, with this new school, with this new city, and this new group of people, and having to like navigate my own esteem and my own image and all this stuff. Like, it was all kind of conglomerating at this one point. And I just remember experiencing like a variety of emotions, variety of like anxieties. I wasn't medicated. I was just hoping that it would all kind of like work itself out and like it would just be happy. And then I would find myself in these pits of like horrible anxiety where like, and depression, where like I feel like I had known, like it was really like really, really awfully like emotionally. I didn't even feel like my life was bad. Like, I feel like I had a really great life at that point because I wasn't feeling happy. Like, I wasn't feeling joy. And it was just this weird dichotomy of like, this is not about my mentality anymore. It's a matter of like brain chemistry. And so I got really lucky. I got in some great meds and, you know, life got a lot better for that, like mentally. As far as like, you know, navigating college with like a variety of mental health issues, it's having to access the services and ask for support around you. For me, like, I would ask professors, I would kind of keep them in the loop as far as like my mental health, and I felt comfortable doing that. And that's right. Kind of where like the discretion is like a lot of people don't feel comfortable doing that for like a variety of reasons, and that's totally okay. Towards the end of my schooling at Loyola, it turned into a lot of other people projecting their own insecurities and their own mental health onto me. And then because my brain and my behaviors don't operate at a neurotypical level, it like there was like a lot of clashing. And
you said this was towards your senior year?
Yeah.
I asked you about whether this was towards your senior year, just because like just during senior year, I think a lot of anxieties come up for people as to what's next after this, because in college, you know, you're finally about to get into the real world. You know, life is changing as you know it. If for those who are not going back to school, you are going from seeing your friends every day and just trying to have, you know, figuring out, you know, when to see each other with the different schedules. And then it's like now everything almost comes to a halt, and it's not a slow transition. It kind of happens overnight. But what advice do you have for people who have friends that may have mental health issues and are not diagnosed or have not disclosed that information?
With this question, I think it aims at helping support the individuals around you that need a little bit more support. The advice I have is to be open and to be willing to have a dialogue that does not revolve around you as an individual, because mental health is a very personal thing. Yeah. Everyone is going to experience it, yeah, at different levels and at different rates and at different like volumes. Like, it will always be different. It's a very personal conversation to have. And so being open, encouraging help, but also being willing and open to them not wanting help, and like, yeah, being hesitant, because not everybody wants to go see a therapist. There is extreme medical mistrust, and for very good reasons. I mean, we've seen the new suicide hotline number going around where people are like, don't call it because you'll get like institutionalized. And like, that's a very, I feel like that's a very valid concern. Is it, you know, the best method at times when people are at risk of harming themselves or others? Yeah, I mean, we don't really have these other options other than crisis houses. But, you know, encouraging help, encouraging that you're going to be there for them and living up to what you're saying. Because, like, you can tell me all you want that, like, oh, I care. Oh, like, I want to, like, I'm going to do A, B, and C for you. I'll bring you dinner. Like, I'll help you. Like, it's okay. Like, I'll remind you to take your meds. Like there's just certain codependence in that that's unhealthy that you can't, I would say you can't do with people with mental health issues. Like, unless they are saying, like, I need someone to remind me, and that other person agreeing to be that person to a certain degree, like, and has that healthy boundary, like, yes, help them, support them, but, like, it's just having a conversation, being open, having a conversation, listening to the person's needs. If the person doesn't want to go see a therapist, then, like, just being open to that and just being like, okay, like, I'm going to be here for you. Like, if you want to talk, that's totally fine.
Love that you said being able to establish healthy boundaries. And the only way I think that you can really do that is to be able to have open and honest conversations with the people that you are having relationships with. And this is something that is not easy. And I think a key thing to have also would be to have patience. You definitely have to have patience.
And, like, I practice that within my own relationships, within my own friendships, where we kind of have this thing where it's like, okay, like, we're gonna talk, and I will either practice if I'm talking or if they're talking, I'm like, do you want to A, vent? Do you want advice? Or do you just want to be seen? Having that dialogue beforehand where it's like where everybody's happy, where everybody gets their needs met, and there's no further expectation or manipulation or impounding on both parties' emotional, like, availability at the time.
No, that absolutely makes perfect sense. And what advice do you have for parents who may have kids in college that have mental health issues or could have mental health issues? How do you think parents can best support their kids? Because, once we go off to school, especially for those of us, out of state, out of a different city, you're on your own in an entirely different way, and you can get isolated very quickly.
I know a lot of people who, shipped off to college, and they kind of shut down because things aren't relative to them. Things aren't, like, kind of, like, I feel like when I go home to San Diego, I love being home because I know where things are. I know what's available to me. I know what I can get on my insurance because I'm back home in my home state. I know the community, like all these things are very comforting when you're in your home environment. I say home with air quotes again because we all have different varieties of homes and different versions of that. But when you leave the nest and you go somewhere completely new, if you're not handed these things, that's like, phone numbers, contact information, a list of sources of, like, resources that are available to you. You're not, like, it's very hard in conjunction with all your other stuff that you're doing for college, like getting your books, getting set up with a new dorm, with a new person that you've never freaking met before, with a new whole community. All these things are so overwhelming. Like, it's so much that, like, you don't realize until you get there. Mental health takes a back seat until it doesn't. And then you realize that going through this whole process and going through this is not. Like, you're suddenly winded and you're like, I don't know where the frick to go. So if I was a parent, and I'm kind of going off what my mom did, my mom was extremely supportive. My mom was very helpful in helping me navigate my California insurance into Louisiana and trying to find low cost to no like no cost free services. She helped me with that at first and was very clear and open and being like, I will help pay for your therapy. Like, I will help you navigate this. Like, I will help pay for your medication, and being very open and, like, being supportive of decisions I chose to make, because going from your parents' house when you're 17 to 18 in a whole new state is a very different level of responsibility. And so having my parents just be completely, you have to just trust. And I say have to as like a very like soft cemented statement of like, you have to have this level of trust with your child when they're going to a new city, but you also have to be there for them. Like, you are, as a parental force, you need to be this safety net, I believe. And like, you don't need to take care of everything because that's not your responsibility anymore, but you need to support, be open, and roll with the punches. Because if your child calls you and they're like, I'm having an anxiety, like I'm having a panic attack, like, I'm not doing well, like I have been crumbling, I haven't doing my homework, like kind of like, instead of being like, well, why aren't you doing this, we're paying for this, and kind of be like, okay, is there anything I can do for you right now? And I would have these moments with my mom where she would literally like, I think like freaking Uber Eats me food, like she would send me like $10 to go to a hot dog or something, like it was so kind. And like having people check in my community, like check in on me, I had people like send me like $10 at a time or something, or like, you know, just be so open. And so like, they would text me like, I think there's somebody who I know in New Orleans, like let me try to get you in contact with them. Like, being open, being supportive, being that extra resource when they don't have that for themselves. And you know, I think with HIPAA, like you can only do so much at 18 if your child's 18, but being open to navigating those resources with them and being willing to make mistakes and get frustrated because you won't be able to be there for them. And like,
yeah, because everyone, you know, we're all humans, and with that comes with constant evolution. And sometimes you can't really go against that force, otherwise you will bounce back, you know, really hard, because change is inevitable. And I think an important thing for parents to realize, if there's any parents listening to this or will be listening to this, or our future parents, that going off to college, our only responsibility is not just school. And yes, the government here has defined us to be adults at 18, but we still most definitely need our parents and need to be supported, because we are still figuring out who we are, who we want to be, what our future is going to look like. Because sometimes, you know, halfway through college, I've had friends that, you know, they've woken up and been like, oh my God, this major, like, I don't want to do it. And I've seen like my friend's mental health deteriorate because they're terrified of having to tell their family members about changing their path out of fear of being ostracized. And then now they're not able to focus on their, you know, schoolwork. And then being able to, there's just a lot that comes with it. And I think at the end of the day, doing good by your kids just means loving them and supporting them until the end of time, because that is what our parents are here for and should be here for, because that title will not go away just because we are getting older. And you know, life is not an easy journey. It's definitely a roller coaster of ups and downs, and definitely need to have some cushion sometimes during those those downs. In your opinion, why do you think that people are so impatient with individuals who have mental health issues?
Because it's not comfortable. I mean, it's not always going to be the easiest thing when your friend's depressed and hasn't gotten out of bed in like 5 days to be like, well, let's go do something. Like, aren't you my friend? Don't you want to hang out with me? Like, it all becomes very personal. And like, like, you know, like we just said, like, mental health is so personal, but people's reactions are personal because they don't want to feel rejected either. And like, they don't want to feel alone just as much as like we don't want to feel alone. And you know, feeling so alone can isolate yourself from freaking everybody. And like, it's easy to be impatient. I think compassion is a choice, and having empathy is an active decision. Like, having the ability, making the choice to say, this isn't about me right now. This person is very much going through something. And I need to be open and kind of not close down, but put to the side the fact that this is hurting me, because I think it's hurting my friend a little bit more. I think it's also a matter of impatience and like greater lack of understanding that when people go to therapy, it's not going to be an instant fix. When people go on medication, it's not going to be an instant fix. There will always be a part of you that will still get sad, will still get manic, will still get, like, because mental health is not linear, and I feel like that's something that's been pushed down our throats in variety of sources, because, I mean, look at movies. We see a movie about mental health, and they get better at the end. There seems to be no gray area. Or it's, you know,
take your meds and keep going to therapy, and instant fix, like, nothing is supposed to go downhill after.
Like, bipolar people don't experience that. BPD people don't experience that. Like, these people with, like, serious mental health issues, like, there is a certain level of inconsistency that they are gonna have to get acclimated to, like, to kind of wrap around. It's not comfortable when other people are spiraling and you're trying to move forward. And, like, to a certain degree, I think people need to be okay with the fact that not everything's going to be linear, because that's a matter of their own insecurities coming out and their own issues of control, stability, all these things, you know, coming to play. Like, I would just advise, like, always be willing to educate yourself, always be willing to take the back seat, but not, like, taking a backseat, but don't forcefully put yourself in a backseat position when it comes to somebody else having mental health issues. Because there are so many times when I say this, like, very gently, because I don't want it to take the greater scope of understanding of mental illness, but there are times where people are manipulative, and they don't want to get better. And you can have compassion for that, you can have empathy in their understanding, because they've most likely been through a lot. And you can still have the ability to say, this is not beneficial for me to be in the situation. So I'm going to communicate the fact that I need a little bit of distance and a little bit of space and take a back seat in this friendship and kind of like pull back a little bit. And that is completely okay. Like it is okay if someone is being mean, horrible, awful, ripping into you, like stealing, lying, cheating, manipulative, like awful, they're not being like a good friend, for you to take a step back. And if they say it's because of mental health, that's okay. You can still take a back seat. Like, mental health is not a free for all. Like I'm just gonna mental health this, and then like it's okay to be
right
awful. like and I feel like that's like a thing to kind of spiral a little bit, to go into what I'm seeing on like social media, where it's like, well, like I'm mentally ill, so like it's okay. And it's like, no, you're being kind of a terrible person. And like you can still hold mentally ill people accountable. Like, that is still very much a thing. And like, having a mental health issue doesn't exempt you from like all these things. You can still be like, you know, like in charge.
Amazing. So yeah. What are the top three things that people who are listening can do to be effective allies?
This like ties back into what we were talking about before, but, you know, educating yourself, listening, which is like also a form of education in and of itself, and just having an open mind. So I would say listening and being open-minded, and / I would say like being an advocate. Like, if I could add like a fourth, like, you gotta advocate these people, because you can do all the absorption that you want of this information, but if you're not really taking it upon yourself to say, okay, well, I know A, B, and C, but I'm not gonna, like, fight for them at all, like, you know, then what's the point of learning if you're not really gonna, like, be there for them?
No, that is absolutely awesome. Thank you so much for being a part of this conversation and for, you know, being vulnerable and keeping it real. If you're hearing this message right now, it means that you've listened to the entire episode. And for that, I would like to thank you all so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this episode just as much as we did. So until next time, keep conversing, keep engaging, and never stop learning.
Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to the inclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.